Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Announce my first sponsor, Robin Kelson from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
So I'm excited to announce the 2016 Organic Gardener Podcast Challenge. And this year I'm making it like super simple. So all you have to do is plant a seed. Or, you know, of course, like if you're going to plant a tree, you know, you're probably going to get an actual tree. But plant anything. Plant a fruit, a flower, a vegetable, an herb, you know, just anything that you want to grow, any seed. Let me know, join the challenge, join the rest of us. You can, you know, post it on the Organic Gardener Facebook page. You can send me an email at just orgpodcast@gmail.com. That's just orgpodcast@gmail.com. Or of course the long version, organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. You can reach out to me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. It's at Organic G Podcast is my Snapchat. I think if you just look under Jackie Marie Beyer, it'll come up. And just, you know, snap me a chat and tell me what seed did you plant? What are you going to grow? And join the 2016 challenge. Let's get growing.
Yep. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today I am just... I'm really excited because I know listeners are going to enjoy this interview. It's actually one of the very few interviews I've ever redone because we're just going to have fun today. And I have this great guest and we're just, I know you're going to love to hear her story and about the program where she works. It's just been, she's had an amazing life, even though she's one of those rock star millennials. So she's still pretty young. But so far she's done a lot of things. I know I wasn't quite as courageous when I was her age, and just, I think you'll be inspired too. So, I'll be quiet now and I'm going to introduce my guest, Jess Pierce. Welcome to the show today, Jess.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm so happy to be here.
Okay. So tell listeners a little bit about your own personal story. Like tell us so we can get to know you a little better.
All right, Jackie. Well, I am currently the mini farm manager at the Drevin Center for Research and Education in Willits, California. But I'm originally an East Coaster. I'm from Baltimore County, Maryland. I grew up there with a pretty classic suburban upbringing. I have no memorable experiences with farming or gardening as a child. And I grew up and I went to college because that's what I was supposed to do, and put in my 4 years and got out of college, and I realized I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I knew I wanted to make a difference, but I had no idea how. And I was sitting there thinking and realized that, well, if I don't know what I want, I should just go out and serve other people. Maybe if I go serve them, then I'll figure out what the right thing for me is. So I was fortunate to come across AmeriCorps programs, and I found one working with adults with disabilities. So I moved out to Tucson, Arizona, and I started this job, and I was going to help people. So I did that job for a year, and I thought, well, this is really cool. I help people, but what about the environment? It's really great to help people, but if they don't have anywhere to live, then what is helping them going to do? Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get another AmeriCorps job, and I'm going to help the environment. So I got a job in Oregon working for a trail conservation crew.
Nice.
And I I pretty much lived in the woods for a whole year and just maintained these hiking trails. And I felt like I helped the environment and I did a really noble thing for the planet. And I was like, well, this is cool, but how do I bring these together? How do I help people and help the environment? And so then I had the fortunate opportunity to move to Hawaii. And a friend was like, let's go move to Hawaii and we'll work on farms there and we'll figure something out.
Let's just move to Hawaii and we'll figure something out. And then what happened?
Yeah, right?
I love those friends. Those are the best kind of friends, right?
Yeah. So so we moved to Hawaii and I started working on a farm out there. And it really probably only took me about a week of working on a farm to be like, this is it. I found it. I was in love, Jackie. Like, I was just like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And, you know, it really became clear to me that this was the way to mix serving people by growing them nutritious food and serving the earth by practicing ecological farming practices. And you could tend the soil and care for the earth and give back while receiving nutritious, healthy food that for myself and that I could share with the community there.
Awesome. So, that is just a beautiful story. You're kind of painting it over and making it sound a lot easier than I'm sure it really was, no matter how rewarding. I know my husband and I met planting trees for the Forest Service, but that certainly wasn't for a year. Well, a whole year of camping and living and working on a trail crew.
Yeah. No, it was tough work and you know, but it was a cool experience for me because it really showed me how rewarding hard work really is. You know, I had never had an experience in my life that really pushed me and challenged me physically and mentally and emotionally in that way. And going through that process and really coming out the other end and being like, oh, I'm still alive and I survived. And it really made me see like how much I am capable of and really how capable all humans are, like how much potential we all have. And it's just that often we're never pushed to our limits.
Nice. And I love the whole service piece and how you were, you know, thinking about, you know, what can I do to help other, you know, I don't know what I want to do, so why don't I just go help some others for a while? And I mean, that's just incredible. What a great attitude and what a great idea. And it's interesting because when I came to plant trees, I remember asking this friend of mine who was, the university I went to has this big wilderness and civilization program, and the students get to go do all these things outdoors, and they're, you know, usually pretty athletic, pretty, you know, active people. And I really wasn't, I mean, you know, I was in college, I rode my bike a lot, but I wasn't, you know, the most sports oriented. And so I was like, well, what could I do to train? And he was like, Jackie, you're probably in good enough shape just being you. The biggest thing is attitude. He's like, it's all about attitude. And I think you're like, you know, really being exemplifying that a little bit to the max.
That's totally the best advice. It really is about attitude. I mean, it's so at the core of all of it. And as soon as we can break free of the little boxes we put ourselves in and have this positive, proactive attitude, we can accomplish anything.
Nice. All right. Well, we're already starting off with you dropping tons of golden seeds. And I do tell listeners a lot that, you know, if you don't know what you want to do when you go to college, you know, a lot of times you'll meet somebody who will be like, oh yeah, my cousin's best friend, you know somebody. Like me coming to plant trees was like friends that I met in college. They weren't even in my classes, but they were like, you know, my roommate's friend was like, you should go plant trees. It'll be a good thing for you to do. And this other friend of mine was like, you should go work for this crew up in Eureka. That's where they're the best crew. And if you're going to go plant trees, you need to go work for those guys. And then, you know, 2 weeks after I was here, I met my husband on the hillside. And we just fell in love from there. And so, you know, you just never know where, but I really think, you know, probably you know, it's always good to step outside your comfort zone and, you know, make those connections, and you'll end up in the right place because the right people will say, oh, you should go do this.
Yeah, that's a great story. What a great way to meet your love. That's beautiful, Jackie.
Thanks. Yeah, it's worked out pretty good so far. So, we're about to celebrate 23 years. So, pretty crazy. And like, you know, I was like this little girl in New York, always dreaming about moving to Montana. But even like moving to Missoula, like when I graduated high school, there was no way I was ready to come to Montana. And even when I moved when I was 21, it was still seemed like a big deal to go across the country and get a car and drive. And it just seemed so far away. And so for you to go, you know, from Maryland, and then you're like, oh, well, I'm going to go, you know, take this AmeriCorps job in, did you say Arizona?
Yeah.
And so that's still a long ways away. You're going and taking this job you're not sure about. And AmeriCorps, if listeners don't know, is kind of like the domestic version of the Peace Corps. Instead of going to another country, you come work in communities around here. And now there's a big branch of that called the Food Corps. I've met quite a few Food Corps people since I started my podcast. So people that specifically work on, you know, helping sustainable food, provide food for people who, healthy, nutritious food for local people. Anyway, and then you go from Arizona to Oregon and, you know, get a job on a trail crew and then to Hawaii. And now you're in California, right?
Yeah.
See, now, and I thought for some reason your family was in California, but they're in Maryland. Is that where you grew up?
Yep, they're still in Maryland. I grew up in Baltimore County. It's like right outside of Baltimore City. I grew up right near the city line.
Okay, so you said that you didn't really have any gardening experience when you were a kid. Do you want to tell us about your very first gardening experience then? Like, you know, how old were you? Who were you with? What do you remember?
Well,
what'd you grow?
Really, I mean, I would say my first experience was on this farm in Hawaii. I mean, I'm sure that I was in a garden or went to a farm before then, but it was didn't touch me. It wasn't a memorable experience for me. And it really wasn't until I got out to Hawaii that I really understood what it was all about. And then, and it was really cool to have my first farming experience in Hawaii because there was just such a stronger sense of the issue of food insecurity. I think just because they're islands, there seemed to be a greater awareness of the fragility of the food system and how if the boat stopped coming, how would they have their food? They only had 10 days worth of food on the island at any given time. So there just seemed to be a really strong conversation around the importance of creating stronger food systems on the islands and being able to sustain themselves. So if the day came where the boat stopped coming, they would still have enough food to eat. And so I think I feel very lucky to have had that early exposure to that mentality because it's really true of any city or anywhere in the world. I mean, most of the food is brought in. And what if that system stopped? And, you know, as many listeners probably know, our conventional food system is pretty fragile. You know, it's based on these fossil fuel imports and a lot of chemicals and things that are not healthy for our planet or for our bodies. And it really could fall apart. And so what do we want to do to make it stronger and more sustainable? And, you know, I was really asking myself these questions when I was in Hawaii. I was like, what do you do? How do you grow enough food? And there's not a lot of farmland on these islands. Like, how do we do this? And then I met this amazing couple who were farming on Kauai, and they had this tiny, tiny growing area, but it was gorgeous, and it was packed full of plants, and they were growing, attempting to grow their whole diet, and they were growing crops for soil fertility, and they were growing crops for market to make an income, and they were breeding seed varieties or plant varieties, breeding seeds so they could have crops that would be better adapted to growing in their tropical environment. And they were just amazing. And I was like, how are you doing this? How can I do this? This is just amazing. And they were like, well, have you ever heard of John Jevons? And I hadn't. And so they gave me the book, How to Grow More Vegetables and Fruits, Nuts, Berries, Grains, and Other Crops Than You Ever Thought Possible on Less Land Than You Can Imagine by John Jevons. And I opened the book and it's all there. It's this simple, accessible method to growing food in a really small space. And it just clicked for me. I was like, this is how we do it. This is how anybody anywhere could grow food and work together to create a more resilient food system, more sustainable communities. And man, it was like such a relief for me. I was like, this can be done. It is possible. And I just really felt so empowered that I could go out in any yard, any space, and grow food.
Awesome. Okay, before we move on to where you're at now, I just quickly, because we didn't mention it, but were you working for the woofer, like that, was it Worldwide Opportunities for Organic Farmers? Were you doing that kind of program in Hawaii?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah, I was just a volunteer.
The farm that you were volunteering on is a different farm than these people, and you just happened to find them because you were walking by their yard, or that was the place that you were sent?
No, actually, we met them through the farmers that we were working for. They were friends, and so I never actually worked on their farm full time, but on my day off from the farm I was working at, I would go and work at their farm for the day
because
it was just amazing, absolutely amazing. And, you know, it's only through an odd chain of events that I'm still not there, still not working on their farm in Hawaii, but I'm grateful for the life events that brought me to where I am today.
Okay, so let's just transition right into that. Where are you today? Tell listeners about how I reached out to you, or anyway, how we found each other. Just tell them where you are.
So I'm currently the mini farm manager at the Jevons Center for Research and Education, where we teach and practice the grow biointensive method of sustainable mini farming. This method attempts to grow a complete diet on the smallest area possible while maintaining soil fertility and conserving resources. So it was originally started by John Jevons in 1972 down in Palo Alto, California. And so these techniques that we use here have been practiced for over 40 years, and it's just a beautiful, simple method of agriculture that is truly accessible to anyone, anywhere in the world.
Yeah. And so the place I found you is because the Bountiful Gardens catalog is where we get a lot of our seeds. And then I was reading the back of the catalog, and that's where it talks all about the program, and people can come there and do internships, right? Or they can take workshop classes, and then they can learn. But today we're going to talk about the program and the method itself, right?
Well, yeah. So originally, the Jevons Center is a part of the nonprofit Ecology Action, and Bountiful Garden Seed Company is also under the Ecology Action nonprofit umbrella. And so while we function on a day-to-day basis as separate organizations, we're very connected to one another, and we grow some seed for them, and we receive some seed from them as well, and we will table with them at events and things like that. So they're also located right here in Willits, California, so we partner with them on a lot of things. And they, you know, the seed company was started as a part of Ecology Action because when John was starting this back in the 70s, he had trouble accessing high quality open pollinated seeds. So he was like, well, if I can't buy them, let's grow them. Let's have them here and provide them to people. And so it just kind of was an idea that was born out of necessity and now has really flourished into this amazing seed company that really offers very great, high quality seed and really exciting special varieties.
Mm-hmm. And we've grown a lot of those seeds and use them here. So I can definitely testify to that because my husband's grown a lot of food. But you're going to talk about the biointensive method, right? Which, like, one of the biggest things that surprised me was, well, I'll let you talk about it and because I don't want to interrupt how it works, but was how much you put into growing, like, is it the cover crops or it was like 60% of what you grew was for improving the soil, right? And only 30% was calorie crop. I'll let you.
So the method has these eight fundamental principles that kind of guide the method. So these principles help us achieve the goals of being able to grow a complete diet and maintain soil fertility and conserve resources. And so it's actually the eighth principle, the last principle, but I think it in many ways kind of belongs first as this idea of a whole interrelated farming system. So anytime you walk into any growing space, it's taking that mindset and that perspective that this is parts of seed and plant and soil, but really it's this dynamic living system that we're going to interact with. And so when we approach a garden and a farming technique and even our backyard garden, we need to think about how all the parts are connected to one another and how if you just try to isolate one particular step or principle, it will not function properly. It's not something to be isolated and pulled apart. It's meant to be seen as a whole unit.
So do you want to go through the eight steps then? We'll start at the top.
Yeah, so the first principle is deep soil preparation, or what we call double digging. So we're trying to prepare the soil very deeply so that we can grow a lot of plants in a small space, yet they still have well-developed soil structure and pore space and room to have their roots grow and receive nutrients. And so this goes along with the principle of close plant spacing, right? So this is how we achieve the ability to grow a lot of food in a small space.
Nice.
So we have the soil is deep, and we can plant the plants very close together, and this also when the plants are that close together, they create this living microclimate. Their leaves just touch each other, and it creates this protection for the soil below and this really healthy, cool environment under the leaves that really fosters a lot of healthy life and growth under there. One of the principles is the use of compost, which is also very important. We can't plant all these plants very close together in a small area if we don't have fertility to provide for them.
Yeah.
So seeing how all these things work together, so that's one of the principles.
And I was going to say, when Mike first, because our garden's gradually, you know, gotten a little bigger every year and every year and every year. And so, and especially when we first started, one, we had limited water, but we also didn't have a fence. And so we just had like 2 8x4 beds, I think they were. And then Mike also built these little really deep beds that are like, they're like hip high, but they're only like 3x4 feet. And so I think having that because they were hip high, that dirt that the plants could go down into made a huge difference in his success.
That's really cool to hear. And it's kind of amazing with that deep fertility, all the water that can be held down there and the nutrients that can be held in that healthy, porous soil.
Yeah.
That's cool to hear that was successful for you.
And then he built these little plastic covers that were kind of like mini high tunnels, except for they're just, you know, because they just fit on that bed. So they were easy. They were light. You could pick them up. You could put them down. It was like just this plastic, you know, round lid. You know, he just took like 1x4s with PVC pipe and, you know, shaped it over so it would fit over the tomatoes and the eggplants and things when it got cool at the end of the season to let things grow a little longer. You know, I think he figured we could get down to like 27 degrees and it would keep them till there. Anything below 27 degrees, we pretty much lose anyway. But that was pretty nice. And especially it was a good solution for small term because like where I live, and I'm sure a lot of listeners have deer problems. And so before we got the big fence up, that was a good solution for us to just make these little deep beds and have either the plastic protector or he would put like just chicken wire, make like these little teepee type triangular chicken wire lids. Anyway, we're talking about your guys' program, but I was just, you know, saying that I think those deep beds are really nice. I think everybody.
Yeah, no, and it's cool to hear about, and it's also too, it's like for you, you had this exposure to potential deer because you didn't have the fence up. So just by focusing your energy on that smaller space, you were able to cover things and protect them better and look after them and had probably a lot more productivity in that small area mm-hmm. than you would have had if you tried to go bigger and grow more food in a larger space. You probably mm-hmm. got equivalent or potentially higher yield. So it's just kind of cool to realize how just a little TLC in a small space can go a long way.
Yeah. And also it was really easy to weed if there were any weeds that grew anyway. I mean, he didn't have a lot of weeds because he would make sure there wasn't much in there. And then because like of our water shortage, we really just focused on watering the roots. But yeah, you know, mm-hmm. it was easy to grow like a couple of tomato plants and a few cucumber, you know, it was easily enough to grow enough of that stuff just for us to eat. Just the mm-hmm. basics. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, and that's a great point about the water too. When you're working in a smaller space, you need less water. You have less ground to cover. You can be more focused and intentional about where you're putting your water. Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
And it's a much more resource efficient way to use water is to grow in a small space.
Yep. There's nothing like calling your water to teach you about how to be efficient.
It's very true.
When you try to haul water to garden, you really make sure only stuff that's growing gets those precious drops, especially in the middle mm-hmm. of the summer when everything's hot and dry and thirsty and you're hauling gallons and gallons of water. But anyway, mm-hmm. okay, so we're talking about compost, and then what's next?
So then we really try to be intentional about companion planting and pairing crops that will benefit each other. This is another way to maximize efficiency in a small growing area. So not only do we look at, not only do we look at the beneficial companions that you read about traditionally in a companion planting book, but we're also thinking about roots and what are the different root structures of crops and how will they grow next to each other. And so this, how could we stack crops together to benefit each other? So for example, this past growing season in 2015, I experimented with interplanting lettuces in with my quinoa. And so by putting the lettuces in between the quinoa, it created this microclimate, this protection for the soil, while the quinoa got big enough to cover the ground with their own leaves. And then by the time the quinoa got big enough to cover the ground themselves, the lettuce was mature, and I could harvest that out from underneath the quinoa and got two crops out of this bed while they, in time and space, they were good companions for one another, and they supported the growth of one another.
Nice. I like that. So quinoa, that's like a grain, right? That's kind of like a mm-hmm. mixture between couscous and rice is the way I kind of always describe it, if listeners don't know. And it's really healthy for you. I just actually had some yummy quinoa down at, there was like this farm financing workshop I got to go to. And somebody, it was like a potluck, and somebody had brought a yummy quinoa salad. And so then how do you harvest quinoa? And so it it must have a longer growing, it takes longer to grow than lettuce. Is that the deal?
Yeah, yes, definitely. It's a longer growing time than lettuce. And there are numerous varieties. They're very hardy, adaptable crop. And so it can come in all different heights, and it can take different times to mature. But I would say generally 4 months would be like an approximation of about how long it takes most quinoa varieties to mature in most climates.
Okay.
And quinoa fits right into a very important part of our growing system, because we grow a lot of grain as a part of our farm. And it fits into one of our principles where we're trying to grow these crops that will help maintain soil fertility. So what that means for us is we want to grow crops with a lot of biomass so we have materials to build compost. And so grains are this great example of these crops that we can grow that have the potential to have very tall, long stalks that give us a lot of biomass for compost building, but they also provide us with grain, with food to feed ourselves. So we grow approximately 60% of our entire growing area in these crops that can provide us with both food for ourselves and food for the soil.
I love that. So one thing we've like noticed, I think, is like, well, so we finally bought a chipper a couple of years ago because like corn stalks and sunflower stalks and some of those things are harder to compost. So is quinoa like that? Or is it, I love the thought of growing things that are putting nitrogen into the soil and putting healthy nutrients into the soil and something you can eat too. Because most of the cover crops I've heard about, well, the lentils you could eat too, but like clover more and just some other buckwheats and things. I guess buckwheat you probably eat. I don't know. I'll be quiet. Go ahead. Talk some more.
Yeah, you definitely can. You can eat buckwheat. It's harder to clean the seed by hand. You need a de-hulling mechanism because okay. The hull around the buckwheat is a very tight shell, but it's definitely breakable and definitely edible. So quinoa has a similar very structural carbon stock. It has a lot of lignins in the stock. So it is not quite as fibrous as a corn stover, but it is definitely a sturdy piece of organic material. And for us in our compost system, we actually really like having that high structural carbon material in our piles. And so it can take a little bit longer to break down than some other materials. But by that more structural carbon helps create a diversified amount of kinds of carbon in our compost pile. And when we have that diversity of carbon in our pile, we're feeding a really wide range and a high diversity of microorganisms in our compost pile. And then we're having this diversity of carbon that we're putting into our soil. And with all that diversity creates this resilient growing system that's much more capable and adaptable to whatever natural conditions might occur. So with climate change and all these other potential insecurities in our growing system, the more diversity we put into our system, the more resilient and adaptable it can be.
Awesome. And that's just yesterday I was seeing one of my Facebook groups. Somebody was like in a total panic because her high tunnel had, the plastic had just shredded and the roof had blown off, and she had all these seedlings she's going to try to get in the ground in the next 2 weeks, but this big storm was moving in, and she was just, it was really kind of, you know, she was just nervous and scared and like, oh my goodness, all my hundreds of babies are going to die, or thousands. I mean, she had a, you know, those high tunnels are pretty big, and she had a lot of starts, and she's, and so, you know, climate's a huge effector in your growing system. So anything you can do to help your, you know, soil health, which has been a big, you know, theme on my show for sure. A lot of my guests have talked about soil health is, you know, the key to everything. And so I love the way that you're growing 60% of your space is being used to grow something for, and that's another thing is like people are always asking us, and we've always struggled with, where do you get dirt to fill when you make those deep beds? You know, where do you get good topsoil? Where do you get, you know, enough compost? Like, so quinoa, a great one that people might be interested in, not realize. Now, can I grow quinoa in Montana? Do you know? I think we're probably too cold, 4 months. I don't know if that would go or not.
I think you could. It's slightly frost hardy. I definitely think you could find a variety, because there's some quinoas. We are always trying to grow the tallest varieties possible, and generally with height comes more growing days. But there's definitely shorter varieties that I think you could definitely find a variety of quinoa that's right for you.
Okay. And listen, I just hope people are like, I remember when we first talked about that, it just made my head spin to think about growing something that's going to be taller just for the biomass. Like, I think that's just such an interesting way to look at your seed packets and start thinking about that kind of variety. What can you grow that's going to be taller so you get the most biomass out of it?
Yeah, and it's kind of cool because a lot of, well, I guess this is not exactly cool, but a lot of modern grain varieties have been bred to be shorter because it's easier to harvest with machinery. So it actually takes a little bit of like time and creativity to go through and look at these older heirloom varieties and find these older, taller varieties. And so it's kind of just fun that I'm like naturally encouraged to go and not only look for plants that will provide me with more biomass, but also it's encouraging me to go out and look for these older, more heirloom varieties and be a part of preserving them.
Nice. I've been reading a whole bunch about seed vaults and seed varieties and different, there was like a new young adult book at my library called Seeds. I was just reading this morning, and it's, you know, it's geared towards high school kids, but, it was just talking about the, you know, the different heirloom. It had pictures from heirloom conferences, and it was really cool to see, them talking about, like, there's basically out of, I would have to get the book to see the numbers, but like, we eat from like less than 200 varieties out of like thousands and thousands of varieties that have been on the earth. And basically, I think it was like some really small number, like 10 is what most of our food comes from.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to read about. Yeah, it's like such a small diversity these days in most modern agriculture. And so when we're growing in this small area and we in these backyard gardens, we have a lot of freedom and flexibility to experiment with these other varieties. And the more varieties of every crop that we have, this diversity, you know, we'll have more options of crops to grow when the weather changes. As things, you know, potentially change in our world, we have more diversity and in turn more resilience. So it's very exciting to me to experiment with these older varieties of crops.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so then what's the next step? So we talked about double dug the raised beds, double, you know, making that soil nice and deep, and then composting and intensive planting and companion planting. So then what's next?
So we were talking about growing quinoa and these grain crops in 60% of our growing area to really ensure we have enough material for our compost pile. And then because we want to grow a whole diet, we're trying to focus on, and we want to grow this diet in the smallest area possible, we're really trying to focus on really calorie-efficient crops. So crops that will give us a lot of calories in very small areas. So for us, this is mainly potatoes, garlic, leeks, and really the book lists 7 crops that we found to be very efficient for this. And so when we're really intentional about planting 30% of our growing space in these very calorie efficient crops, we can ensure we're going to have enough food for ourselves, along with the grain crops we get from the 60% of our growing area. And then the final 10% of our growing area, we're growing in your more classic vegetable crops. So that's your tomatoes and lettuce and kale. And so that's where we're going to get all of our micronutrients and really ensure that we have a holistically healthy diet.
I think listeners are going to be fascinated by that. So only 10% of your garden is where you grow classic vegetable crops. And they're going to think, wow, I can do some things differently. And if I was only going to grow that 10%, you know, if you really just only want to grow lettuce and tomatoes, you know, that's going to be easier to do. But that these other things can really make such a difference for you to be able to grow your whole diet if you're interested in it. So,
yeah, and a lot of these techniques and principles are still applicable if you're not trying to grow a whole diet. It's just kind of amazing to learn about how easy it can be to really grow more of your complete diet in such a small space. And, you know, this is a great way to maybe not make money, but this is an amazing way to save money. You know, the more food you can grow in your yard, the less you have to buy from the store. And you can kind of be assured that it's going to be potentially the healthiest quality out there. I mean, obviously it depends on your soil, how healthy the food is, but I really believe that the food that we grow with our love and intention is going to be the healthiest food for us.
That's beautiful. I love that. The food that we grow with our love and intention is going to be the healthiest quality food for us. And that's so true. And just, you know, people talk a lot about how, I know I do. I mean, it's very hard for me to buy organic food when I'm at the grocery store. And, you know, in Montana, we have a little bit of a shorter season maybe than in California. Although are you in Northern California or Southern California?
In Northern California. So I'm about 3 hours north of San Francisco.
So your climate's not like that super sunny, you know, it might be sunny all the time, but not like that super hot, like down by LA or south of San Francisco that you're going to get. So, anyway, I don't remember what my point was, but just that, that people can grow more food of their own food that they want to eat. Like you said, you know, you might not be growing to make money, but being able to grow your own food. Just the more of it that you can grow, it's amazing. You know, a packet of seeds is pretty inexpensive. You know, building that soil is a little, you know, being able to build your own soil up is just huge to me. I think that people are going to realize, wow, I can make my soil healthier and I can grow some of that stuff they charge me a fortune for by putting these cover crops on, you know, part of my yard or something, right?
Yeah, and you know, we like to use the terminology with the cover crops. We actually like to call them compost crops. These crops off with their life with that intention that, you know, they're going to help us build compost and they're going to help us build fertility. And another great thing about growing these grains is not only can they provide us the biomass to build our compost pile, and they provide us with food, but most of these grain crops have really deep, amazing root systems that can go really far down into your soil, especially if you deeply prepare it and build the soil up from below, right? Because these plant roots, they put out these exudates, and that attracts all this microlife into their root zone. And then the microlife is breaking down parent material and providing nutrients to these crops and creating this, like, buzzing living city around the root system of microorganisms. And with all that life in your soil, that's building soil, that's healthy soil. And so that life around the root zone, plus injecting, well, I guess you don't inject it, but you lightly amend with your homemade compost, and that life and potential humus added to your soil too. I mean, that's how we grow and build soil. And it really can be as simple as is growing crops with a lot of biomass.
I love that. And I thought you were going to say, besides, they're really pretty.
And they're really pretty. Quinoa is a gorgeous crop. It's super beautiful. And one that we grow a lot here in the summer also is amaranth, which is, yeah. It's often, there's a lot of just purely ornamental varieties, which are still edible, but they're bred for their beauty and not necessarily for their flavor or nutrition. But, I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous crop.
I bought some seeds from, I bought clover cover crop and buckwheat cover crop and then some amaranth from Lisa Ziegler, who's been on my show a few times. And she's a flower farmer on the East Coast. But I bought those just to build our soil and to, we bought the clover. A lot of the clover is for our bees because we want them to have more stuff, you know, more blooms for them is part of why we got the clover. But also, yeah, it's just neat to see, to be able to grow something that's going to put, you know, nutrition into your soil and build the soil at the same time. And the other thing I was thinking is that, like, so this woman, Liz Carlisle, came on and talked about the Lentil Underground growing, where they're growing those crops on the east side of Montana without using irrigation. And the east side is notorious for being a much drier climate. And so to be able to grow some of those crops without needing as much water because they are managing to get by in Montana with just the rain that comes down is another plug, especially, you know, in California where you guys have a lot of droughts and difficult water. I was just watching that GMO OMG movie last night. And they, the guys from the Rodale Organic Test Farm Trials were there talking about how the organic, when you have conditions that are less than ideal, the organic will produce bigger yields. And so, and that's kind of been my driving force behind how I started my podcast to begin with, was I read about the organic farm trials back in 2000. And I've always been a big fan of organic gardening. Now I guess it's called Organic Life magazine. Anyway, little tangent there. Okay, so we talked about what our calorie crop. Did we talk about what the efficient calorie crops? You said potatoes.
Yeah, so there are 7 crops that we found that are like really great at filling this niche of like giving us the calories we want in this really small space. So they are potatoes, leeks, garlic, sweet potatoes, parsnips, Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes, and a crop called salsify, which is just a funky older root crop. Some people call it an oyster plant. And these 7 crops we found to be very efficient at achieving our goal of calories in a small space.
Okay. And so when you say calories, just for people, if they're wondering, like, we're not talking about, like, you know, counting, or are we talking about, like, counting your daily calories, like you should get X amount of calories a day? I mean, that is kind of what it is, right?
Yeah, so a big part of this method that we practice is diet designing, right? And so it's kind of the opposite of like dieting, calorie counting that you classically hear about, because we want to make sure that we're going to grow enough calories. And so that's where we start, right? We start with, we need to run a farm. We need a certain amount of energy to work in the field. So we're going to plan for us to have enough calories to have that energy. And then we start getting into the micro and macronutrients that are also necessary for to be a healthy human and have the energy we need. But for us, it starts with calories. And so it's kind of a funny thing to think about in our world of abundance, where we're often thinking about eating less calories. But when you're really trying to grow all your own food, you want to make sure you have enough.
That is interesting. I love that, though. It's a great way to look at it. Maybe people will start to kind of think of things that way. Okay. Should we go through some of the questions I normally ask? Well, all right. Was there anything else that I've forgotten? We went through the whole, did we go through all 8 methods?
Well, the last and final one I just wanted to mention was that we really focus on using the open pollinated seeds that can be saved for growing in the final year versus a hybrid seed, which you can't save the seed or if you do save it, it won't grow true to type the following year. So that's a very important ethic of ours because of this attempt to create more resilient growing systems. If we can save our seed, we don't need to be reliant on seed companies or outside sources. And slowly over the years, if we're intentional about how we save that seed, we're breeding a variety that is adapted to thrive in our microclimate, like the small microclimate that is our garden or your garden. This seed is adapting to live there and to thrive there above any other place. And so that is just amazing that we can interact with the growing system in that way and partner with a plant to have it thrive in our garden. And that's a big part of why the Bountiful Garden Seed Company started in the first place, to help people achieve that goal. So then it's really for us about how all these principles fit together in this holistic mindset that really makes the living difference. And, you know, it's a big part of why I really fell in love with this method of farming is that it happens on such a small scale. And I mentioned that accessibility factor, which I think is really empowering for me and for anyone. But also just the ability to work on in such a smaller space that gives you the opportunity to interact with the whole growing area every day. And when you have the time and the ability to interact with your whole growing space, first of all, you have the ability to make every plant the best plant it can be. And if every plant is producing as efficiently as it possibly can, you're going to have greater productivity in this small space. And also, too, you know, when you have the time to interact in this way, you start to see how everything is connected and you really observe and experience these connections and you get to interact with this life cycle that's occurring in the garden. And I really think that when you can reconnect with this natural system, you really start to see how the human's place in this natural cycle of life and in our role in this greater ecosystem that is the planet. And when we started experiencing on a heart level these connections, I really think it has this endless impact to create positive change in the whole world and the whole planet. So I really think it's powerful what we can do just in our backyard garden or small space garden. So it's really why I love this method and why I feel so lucky to have found myself as the farm manager out here in Willett. So, yeah.
Well, I think we're lucky that you're out there educating people and working hard in your garden and teaching us and just... That was just beautiful, so eloquent, and just, I think listeners are going to be super inspired that growing in their own backyard is going to make a big difference in the world. And, you know, one of the things I didn't really realize till I started this podcast was how seeds, people who save seeds are really the biggest people changing the world today. And Bill McDormand came on episode 100, I think. And really talked about, you know, not worrying about Monsanto, not worrying about what's going on with the big seed companies and just the more seeds that we save and how they get acclimated. I had no idea that, you know, if you saved a seed, it was going to get more acclimated to our environment and that it would grow better the next year and grow better the next year and that each year. Like, I would just always go buy new seeds every year and never even thought about it. So, and he has a great book on seed saving. I think it's like a PDF you can download for free from his website. On how simple it can be and just really encourages people to save their seeds. So I think you've just really encouraged people to, I think you've just really inspired people that they can do this and that they can grow. Because it's true. It's amazing how much produce you actually get from one plant. how much of a difference just one little plant can do. And nobody's going to grow just one plant, or very, it's not likely you're going to grow just one thing. You're going to have a small little bed. I mean, you could just put a tomato in a pot and have a couple of tomatoes if you're, you know, super busy and live in an apartment or something. But I think people are going to be really inspired that if they do have a backyard, that they could, you know, be more productive, be more successful by following these steps and maybe getting that book, and just that there's ways out there to do this easily. And I like a lot of your things are going to make it not very expensive to get involved in.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big ethic of ours is trying to do things with the minimal amount of resources. We definitely do have some small inputs. I mean, we use rubber hoses and they break sometimes and we replace them, but we're really trying to keep our resource use down.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us about, do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year or last year?
Well, I feel like I already talked about quinoa so much, but it was definitely our star performer in the garden last year. Quinoa got, you know, like 7 feet tall, just really full and colorful. We grew this variety called Kaslala. That's kind of this multicolored, and it kind of starts out with these kind of sherbet colors, or like maybe pastels, and a whole rainbow. And then throughout the season, as it matures, they kind of darken, and it's these deep pinks and these deep greens and deep oranges, and it's just absolutely just one of the most gorgeous crops I've ever seen. And it was very successful for us last year, and it's definitely a very drought-tolerant crop as well. And as I was mentioning, we interplanted with the lettuce, so we got a whole second crop out of all of our quinoa beds, and I just can't speak highly enough of quinoa, and very nutritious for you. It's got kind of a nutty flavor to the grain that's like really delicious.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know what? Let's spell quinoa for our listeners, because it is a podcast, and you know.
Yeah, so it's Quinoa.
Perfect. Okay, so how about something you're excited to do different next year? What are you excited, or this year coming up?
Well, this year, I think what I'm most excited about is that we're going to try to grow a lot of fiber crops in the garden. One of my coworkers is very passionate about fiber arts, and so she's trying to grow flax and cotton, and she wants to harvest the material from them and make fiber. And then ideally we always joke about growing enough to make our t-shirts and grow our own food and grow our own clothes. So I think that's going to be a really exciting project this year. And she grew a small plot of flax last year and it did really well, so we have a lot of faith and excitement that it's going to be super successful again this year.
Nice. How about some hemp? Throw some hemp in that mix. Make some hemp.
Maybe one day they just, I don't totally understand what the regulations are for growing hemp these days, but I think you need a permit and but definitely hemp.
And the DEA would be a great option. And grab your hemp at the very end of the year and say, oh yeah, yeah. We didn't know. Whatever their deal is, but it is a nice fiber. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about something that didn't work so well or didn't come out the way you thought it was gonna last year?
Our cabbage didn't head last year, and so I think it was my suspicion. It was very old seed that I found in a weird little back corner of my tool shed. So I think that it was just potential old seed, but it didn't head. So I just decided to make sauerkraut out of the leaves that did grow And it was by far the most delicious sauerkraut I've ever eaten. I just thought the texture of the leaves, it was this like beautiful in between the crispness of the head, but it wasn't like flimsy, like if you were to ferment kale or something. It was this really delicious in between. So it was like a beautiful, happy mistake that happened.
I like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. What's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you have to force yourself to get out there and go do?
You know, honestly, I thought about this question when I read your list, and I honestly love it all. I mean, as I have worked on farms for longer and longer, I mean, there were things I used to hate doing that I just have done enough times now that I've like learned to love. And yeah, I really, once it's like overcoming the mental barrier that made me dislike a task, mm-hmm. and then becoming really good at it and seeing that pattern over and over again, it's kind of like, okay, well, maybe it's not my first choice thing to do, but I know if I do it, it's going to be rewarding later. And that this step connects me to this other step that I love doing in the garden. And so it's just been through years of repetition that have really taught me to appreciate all garden tasks.
Nice. I love the way you put that. I think that's really going to inspire people. It's inspiring me. It's making me think I should get out there right now. What's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I love building compost. I think that it can be as simple as just throwing things in a pile, but it can be this really like beautiful, interactive and intentional process where you're like creating a recipe of materials and you're building them up together and you're, you know, monitoring the moisture and the amount of air space and the temperature. And it can just be kind of like part of it could be like a magic potion, or it's like this exciting science experiment. And it's like us interacting with this natural decomposition process and like getting to participate in that is just so cool to me. And you know, to me, compost is this key, this vital part of like creating a sustainable system, right? It's like the compost is the recycling aspect. So this is what allows us to cycle our fertility and cycle our nutrients through the system. So hopefully working towards like a closed loop, like we're closing this loop of fertility by recycling. And like this is key to sustainability and this key to soil health and soil fertility. So for me, I just absolutely love it. I think it is just so cool to participate in that natural process. That's like, you know, the natural decomposition on the forest floor. It's just like such a key to life on this planet. I feel so lucky to get to participate.
I gotta say, I agree. I love to make compost too. And listeners, you know from listening to me, if I can do it, anybody can do it, because it's really hard to screw up your compost. I think like you can, if you forget to turn it one day, it's, you know, it's always forgiving. It's really easy to keep that bucket in your kitchen. I've always had a bucket in my kitchen ever since I can remember. Like my mom always had compost on the counter, you know, it gets you outside to go throw it away. It's just like, and I just love the way, you know, like I was talking the other day, our compost pile usually turns to compost within 2 weeks. Like if we're in the middle of summer and we're adding fresh grass clippings, Mike and I can usually make that pile, you know, ready to put on the garden within 2 weeks. And so, but my brother on the flip side, he just like throws everything out there, doesn't deal with it very much, lets it through the winter, and he just has one pile of compost in the spring. That's kind of how he does it. So here's two different people, two different areas. Just Mike and I go through a lot more compost. We have a bigger garden, so we try to produce more. But I just think listeners are going to love your... I know it is exciting. It's like a fun science experiment. And listeners also know I don't usually like to get dirty. It's not a dirty project. It's easy to turn it when no matter what you're wearing. And just, at least for me, that's the way I think. What's your best gardening advice you ever received?
I think I really love the advice, you know, John Devins, you when I first got here, he was like, do one bed and do it well. You know, just focus on this one bed and do a good job here, and that will teach you how to grow all the crops well. And, you know, just that advice to just, like, start small was very empowering. It was much easier for me to succeed and then feel empowered to grow in a, you know, larger space.
Perfect. I love the way you talk about it made you feel empowered and it was easier to grow in a smaller space and then to succeed and just keep growing. And a lot of people have said that too. Perfect. How about, what's your favorite tool? Like if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Well, I really love using my hands and feet as tools whenever possible, or picking up a rock and using that. I love just like being creative with whatever's around me. But
nice.
One tool I really love is it's a Japanese sickle. Mm-hmm. It's just like a serrated edge on a very small hand sickle, and it's just really great for harvesting by hand. So like when we have our grain crops that go to maturity, it's super fast, super efficient for harvesting sets of grain, and definitely really love that tool. We keep it in a very special place in our tool shed, so it doesn't get rusty or messed up.
Nice. One of my very first jobs when I first moved to Montana, but then I went home for the summer, I worked for the governor of Long Island, his like gardening crew or whatever. Like they lived in this mansion and there were like four of us. But I really learned about how to take care of your tools there. Like we would oil the metal part and then we would even like wipe down the wood each night. And I even want to say we put some kind of oil on that too. But just really taking care of your tools is a nice thing to do. So where do you get one of those Japanese sickles?
Bountiful Gardens sells them, and I'm sure you could get them other places too, but that is where we got ours from. So in the back of their seed catalog, they have some, they have tools listed as well.
Okay, and not to embarrass you, but didn't you tell me that you and two of the intern or the other woman that you work with are on the cover of this year's?
yeah. So me and the two women I work with, at the Devon Center Farm. It's the three of us on the cover of the Bountiful Gardens catalog.
Okay, and you know what? You should spell Jevons for listeners in case they don't know how to spell that, just because it is a podcast.
Oh, yeah. So it's John Jevons, and it's Jeavons. And he's the author of the book How to Grow More Vegetables, which is this really great book that talks all about what I'm talking about in a really concise and simple way. And the farm is named after John, who started this farm and this nonprofit. So the Jevons Center for Research and Education.
Nice. Do you want to tell us how you got there, or that was a long story you didn't want to get into? I forgot.
I guess it's kind of, you know, after I was farming in Hawaii and, you know, I really knew that whole story and how I fell in love and I was so passionate about farming and I knew it was what I wanted to do, but I also realized that it was a very settling profession. Like to really be good at it, to me, it felt like you needed to find a piece of land and settle there and get to know the climate and know the soil. And at that time in my life, I was 22, 23, and I wasn't quite ready to be that settled. So I went on power adventuring. And so I went out and I did some more trail work and I did a bike tour down the coast of California and I went rock climbing and mountaineering. I went and lived in Costa Rica for a little while. And I just power adventured. And then, you know, about beginning of 2013, I was finally okay, I'm ready to find my farm. I'm ready to settle down. And when I started looking online, I found the Jevin Center, and the biointensive method obviously was still had created such a strong impact on me in my early exposure to farming. So when I found out, whoa, it is a nonprofit and they have farms and I can work there. And so I sent in my resume and application and started as a 3-year apprentice back in 2013, and then had a lot of fortunate events occur that have led me to be the mini farm manager, which I started that position last year in 2015. And yeah, so that's kind of the long and the short of how I ended up here.
I'm so glad I asked you that. I bet listeners are going to be like, cool, because they probably thought, man, this girl's just so focused, and she knew exactly what she wanted to do right away, and she just went here, there, and boom, she got this job. And I love the part about the adventure, power adventuring. How fun. And then, so see, listeners, there's time to do it all. You can go to college, you can be a power adventurer, and you can still get your dream job. Okay, so what's your favorite recipe? Because we are like well over an hour. I'm glad we're having fun.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm totally not paying attention to the time
yet.
It's
my fault, too. No, don't worry about it.
Well, I guess cut out what you need to. But, yeah, so favorite recipe. So we are all, it's not a formal competition, but definitely a quiet competition to see who can recycle the leftovers in the most exciting way.
I love it.
So we all take turns cooking throughout the week, me and the other farmers and interns on the site. And so far the best one we've come up with is something we call soup bread, which, so you have your original meal, maybe it's quinoa and beans, and so you eat that the first day, and then the next cook turns it into soup, and then you eat it as a soup, and then the next day you cook it into like a quick bread, and you make, it's kind of like a quick bread, like a zucchini bread, except it's a savory version. And so then you cook it into a bread. It's like the ultimate recycle. And then the most amazing is when you can make the bread with some of the soup, and then you take the other part of the soup and you can make a sauce out of it and serve the sauce with the bread. And that is actually insanely delicious. And I think the key to enjoying a simple homegrown diet is just learning how to transform foods in exciting ways.
That was awesome. I love that. Cool. Okay. What's your favorite internet resource?
I'm not much of an internet person for my farming information, but I always am referencing How to Grow More Vegetables. There's these great charts and really helpful information in the back of the book. But another book I really love is it's called Sustainable Market Farming by Pam Dalling. Ooh. And she's just got a lot of cool crop detail information that I find really interesting and helpful for me on a regular basis.
Cool. Okay. I'm just going to go to the final question. Jess, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing the planet in regards to the environment locally, globally, or on a national scale?
So there's this statistic that I find amazing, and it's in Naomi Klein references it in her newest book. That in 1943, during the war, over 40% of the produce grown in the country was grown in victory gardens, in small gardens around the country. And so that's almost half the produce in the United States grown in people's backyard gardens. And to me, that's just like amazing. It's like, there's a precedent for this. Like, it's been done before and we can do it again. And if everybody could just supplement a little bit of their diet in their backyard and take the pressure off this large scale, you know, fragile food system. Like, it could have this amazing difference, not only in food security, but also in health and better nutrition, and then just better connection to the natural world by interacting with a living system. It's just this, like, amazing opportunity for humans to get back in touch. And anyway, I just love that statistic. I think it's so cool that it's happened before. We can do it again. And I think that's how we can make the biggest difference.
Perfect. I love that. Yeah. And I love Naomi Klein's new book. It's the, what's it called? Do you remember what it's called?
It's something like the climate, something, I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Naomi Klein's book is called This Changes Everything.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. So do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden? Not that you haven't given us 20,000 reasons. Like, oh my God, this girl has the secret. I can grow my food in a small space in my little backyard.
Well, something we love to say here on the farm is grow food, grow soil, grow people. And, you know, and it might be better said in the opposite way, but we really, you know, we grow food, we think we want to grow food first, but then we really realize we need to grow soil to grow the food, and then we realize we need people to help us grow the soil to grow the food. And so, you know, I really think it's all about the people and nourishing people, and building stronger, more resilient communities.
Aww, that was beautiful. And what a great way to say that. Grow people, to grow the soil, to grow the food. Perfect. And I think, you know, you're just another one of those rock star millennials that are out there changing the world, doing what you can do to make our planet a better place for your children and for the people that are living here now. Yeah. Okay, so tell listeners, how do they find your website and all that kind of fun stuff?
Well, we actually have two websites. We have an interactive educational website, and it's biointensive.net. And then we have, which has a link to our other website also, but we have a website, growbiointensive.org, which has all of our information about our tours. We host multiple tours throughout the year. We host 3-day workshops. We have an 8-month internship program. We have all these opportunities to come out and see us and learn more about the method. So you can check us out online. And then we also have a Facebook page. It's called Ecology Action. Yeah, so that's how you can find us on the web. And, yeah, go to your local bookstore and look for How to Grow More Vegetables by John Jevons. And, yeah, you can find our information in the back of the Bountiful Gardens catalog as well.
Okay. Also, aren't there, like, videos that people can, like, there's, like, an online course somehow or some kind of videos? I'm sorry.
Absolutely. If you go to the biointensive.net website, it has links to all kinds of instructional, educational videos. You know, we want to grow people. We want to get the information out there. And, you know, we're not keeping any secrets up here on the hill. We want to share them with the world.
Oh, I love it. Just thank you so much for sharing with us today and just bringing your passion, your just knowledge, your love of not just growing food, but, you know, changing our world and one garden at a time, but you're doing a lot more than that and sharing and educating us today. And just happy Earth Day, because it'll probably be about Earth Day when this airs, or it might even be after Earth Day. I don't know. We're getting close. It's like today's April 12th, 10 days away.
So. Oh, well, I just want to thank you so much, Jackie. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me twice. And just, you know, thank you for what you're doing. This is really an amazing, wonderful, important resource to connect farmers. And I'm so grateful that you're out there doing what you're doing. And yeah, you're helping us make the world a better place.
Well, thanks. Well, come join the Facebook group, and more people are joining every day, and you'll meet some other listeners probably right in your area, because California is definitely my biggest listenership is there. So maybe I'll meet some other people closer to you, and just listeners will, I don't know. Yeah, it's just fun. So come find us on Facebook. Thank you again.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.